This is VOCM News Talk. Call 709-273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. The views and opinions of this program are not necessarily those of this station. Here's VOCM News Talk host Linda Swain.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, on this bright and clear Tuesday afternoon. I had to think about that for a moment. Yes, it's Tuesday. All the days seem to meld together, don't they? It's a sad day for many. There is a big investigation underway currently in the Outer Cove area, investigating the sudden and suspicious death of a female in Outer Cove. RNC Constable James Cadigan spoke with reporters, including VOCM's Sarah Strickland, near the scene just after the lunch hour.
Tell us. So today at just before 10 a.m., we responded to a call for service. It resulted in officers attending a property here in Outer Cove, just off Outer Cove Road, and a short time later determined that a sudden death had occurred on that property. At this stage, the sudden death is being treated as suspicious. We are working with the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner to determine the cause of death. Right now, we have contained the property and the investigation is underway. Certainly at this stage, as it is early, we would like to make clear that based on the information we have available, we do not perceive any public safety risk at this stage. We are certainly looking to provide any updates, but we're looking to validate information available to us at this point and work through the investigation.
Do we have any identifying factors? I know you can't say much, but male, female victim?
So what I can say is the deceased individual is female, and that is all we're going to be providing at this stage.
Is it a residential property?
Yeah, so this is a residential property, residential area. So as with any process, we're looking to manage the scene and allow residents to, understand that we have an active investigation ongoing. And if, we would appreciate if the area could be avoided at this time.
So that is in Outer Cove, in a relatively quiet residential area. A lot of trees and wooded area there, normally quite quiet, but that investigation now underway, and they're asking people to stay away from the scene if at all possible. Well, in other news, a special weather statement has been issued by Environment Canada regarding a winter storm system that could affect a portion of the East Coast, including the Northeast Avalon and Southern Avalon and Buren Peninsulas. Say it ain't so, Claudette.
No, I just can't believe when I'm looking at all the amounts that are quite possible, where it's going to hit, and the type of precipitation. Yikes.
Yeah. Now, we're going to get a little rain, I understand, mm-hmm. in the next little while. But, I mean, to look outside today, you just don't want to believe it, do you?
No, it's almost...
You feel hopeful.
You do, but it's the calm before the storm.
Quite literally. Well, snowfall amounts of up to 50 centimeters could be possible in some areas, while others may see even more. Environment Canada meteorologist David Neal joins me now. Well, David, what a beautiful day we're having today.
Yeah, not too bad out there today. So looking at a lot of places across the island with current temperatures kind of in that plus 1 to +5 degrees. So it's not a bad day. It's at least out here in Gander, starting to cloud over a little bit here, but still pretty nice out there for a lot of places.
Now, I understand some rain is on the way. I want to ask you a little bit about that. And I also want to ask you about, gosh, all this buzz that we're in for a big storm later on in the week. First of all, the rain.
Yeah, so it looks like, so we got a weak system that's going to come across here kind of late tonight into early tomorrow. Going to bring a quick shot of rain across many regions of the island, kind of be off and on throughout the day on Wednesday. That'll move out fairly quickly. Not looking at anything overly significant in terms of rainfall amounts, but certainly a bit of mild, a little bit more rain and drizzle. So you kind of pair that with today, a couple of days of mild temperature. So kind of whatever's left of the snow is going to get another beating there before we get into that bigger storm that we're expecting later this week.
There, you said it. Because I know meteorologists don't like to look out too far into the future. But what are you looking at now?
So what we're seeing now is a potential for another system to make its way kind of up from the southwest, and that's going to be kind of slow moving across the island. Long range models have been kind of a little bit back and forth with this in terms of kind of how much snow, which areas are going to get the higher amounts of snow. But it does look like a pretty heavy shot of snow for parts of the island, and in particular, we're looking really across portions of southern and eastern Newfoundland, with the likelihood that parts of the Avalon Peninsula, especially more northern Avalon Peninsula, likely to see kind of the higher end of the snowfall amounts that we're expecting there. And that's expected to kind of gradually make its way west to east across kind of southern eastern regions of the island a little bit later in the day, really throughout the day on Thursday, and then really kind of picking up into Thursday night and into early Friday over a lot of areas. And it does kind of linger over a couple of spots, particularly in eastern Newfoundland, through much of Friday night and into early Saturday. So longer duration event for some of those regions.
Any forecasts as to, you know, precipitation amounts, accumulations?
Still getting hashing out those details at this point, but it does look pretty good that certainly parts of the Avalon Peninsula, particularly the northern Avalon, northeastern St. John's area, and then also across parts of the Buren-Kanagar Peninsula, look like are going to get the highest amounts. You know, some of the forecast models are coming in with some pretty high amounts at this stage. Certainly looks like a good bet to certainly get about 30 centimeters, but yes, some other areas, some model guidance hinting at even higher amounts than that. But yeah, it's certainly something that's going to come a bit into a bit better focus as we get through over the next day or so, really to kind of get a better handle on what some of those higher end amounts are going to be, particularly across the northern Avalon and parts of the south and east coast adjacent to that. One other little consideration too is in terms of just really this system. A lot of forecast models been kind of going really unsure how far north that area heavy snowfall is going to go, and also with that. If the area of heavier snow does go a bit further north, there's some indication that really southern areas of the Avalon Peninsula and the Buren Peninsula could be in for an extended period of either ice pellets or freezing rain throughout that. So that would cut the snowfall amounts down, but that could be quite problematic for some of those regions as we get to more later Thursday and through a good portion of Friday. So very messy system, and one that's still trying to a lot of the model guidance is still trying to get a good handle on it at this stage.
When do you expect to get a better picture of what could be coming?
Really, as we keep going through, as we get closer to the event, certainly we're going to have another forecast update late this afternoon, and of course again early Wednesday morning. By that point, especially that early Wednesday morning forecast, will start getting into the shorter range, where we get the Thursday period into the short range. We'll certainly start to see things hopefully come into a bit better focus as we over the next couple of forecast cycles.
Well, we'll be watching this very closely and keeping in tune to what Environment Canada has to say in the coming days. David, Neil, really appreciate your time.
Okay, not a problem. Thank you.
So there you have it. The models are starting to come together a little bit now, and we could see 30 to 50 in some areas, 50 plus in others, and it looks like it's going to concentrate, because that's where it seems to be concentrating all of this winter, hasn't it? Like the Buren, Bonavista, and the Avalon Peninsulas.
Yeah, I noticed, too, you know, in some of the meteorological talk on social media that some of the small towns on the Southern Buren, like Lawn, Lameline, and St. Lawrence, and also some of the Southern Avalon Peninsula areas like Riverhead and Trepassey, they could get, as he had mentioned as well, about the ice pellets along with the snow, but still too early, I guess, to figure that out.
And by the sounds of it, this particular system that's coming our way, and again, there's no guarantee. I mean, that could shift, and you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But it seems to be another one of these long, slow-moving, long-duration kind of things, which is really adding to the accumulation. So
yeah, and
we've seen a lot of those this winter.
We have. I've noticed that as well, and it's no surprise if things are going to be canceled as well. You know, on Friday we could be getting cancellations.
Well, you can guarantee we'll keep you up to date.
Yes, with our Storm Watch page.
Indeed. Claudette, thank you for that. Well, when we come back, we'll pay a little visit to the House of Assembly and the whole debate over who knew what and when related to the contract for travel nurses that ended up costing the taxpayers of Newfoundland and Labrador some $35 million over a five-month period. When we come back right after this, this is News Talk on VOCM.
Stay informed and have your say on the news of the day with your VOCM. Join Linda Swain weekday afternoons from 4 to 5 p.m. for an hour of talk and discussion with decision makers and listeners like you. News Talk on your VOCM.
And we are back. Well, opposition leader Tony Wakeham continued to push government on who knew what and when and who gave the approvals for a $35 million contract with Canadian Health Labs for the provision of travel nurses over a five-month period. Here's some of the exchange, complete with Wakeham producing the decision note from the minister's office.
I asked the premier, why do I have a decision note signed by your minister authorizing Western Health to extend this arrangement with this company?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd be happy to table that letter in the legislature, Mr. Speaker. They were asking for permission to spend beyond their spending limit. They did give a reason for, I believe it was 41 full-time equivalents for LPNs, not for registered nurses, but for LPNs, Mr. Speaker, because they were facing closures and service cuts, Mr. Speaker, in that region. As I had stated previously, any minister or any member who was faced with having closure cuts would have said yes to that decision, Mr. Speaker. But in the information provided to me, the health authority had said they already had an arrangement with this organization. They wanted permission to spend the money.
The Honourable, the Leader of the Official Opposition.
Yesterday they had nothing to do with it. Yeah. Now all of a sudden they're all over it.
24 hours makes a lot of difference.
On January 12, 2022, three senior staff in the Premier's office, Peter Miles, Melissa Royal-Critch, and Ken Carter, were all included in an email from the head of the Canadian Health Labs. I asked the Premier, were you aware that your senior staff were communicating directly with this company?
Sure they were.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Here's the letter that I will provide to the Western Authority. I hereby provide written approval for the Western Regional Integrated Health Authority to incur expenditures in excess of the original estimate amount set out in its 2022-23 budget for Western Health to enter into an arrangement for agency nursing. It doesn't mention the agency, Mr. Speaker, and there's no direction provided. They ask permission to spend the money because of a dire shortages in health professionals, Mr. Speaker. And as I said previously in the media and in the public, anybody faced with that decision would have provided that authority. It was authority to spend beyond their expenditure limits, Mr. Speaker. Happy to table it.
The Honourable, the Leader of the Official Opposition.
And Speaker, I'll be more than happy to table the decision note signed by the Minister, which details the entire deal with Canadian Health Labs.
We didn't know about that, though.
Speaker, it's scandalous that this government was directly involved in approving these contracts. I asked the Premier again, when did you become aware of $1.6 million being paid out to this company that was never given to the travel nurses themselves?
The Honourable the Minister of Health and Community Services.
I became aware of that, Mr. Speaker, in the Globe and Mail article, because that is, as the former CEO of Lab Grenfell is aware, an operational issue. And that is something that no minister dictates or interferes with his operational issues in the health authority. In fact, if they do, Mr. Speaker, they get in trouble, and the members opposite would criticize them for that. Mr. Speaker, that's where we became aware of it, and I've asked the Comptroller General to enter into a review of what has happened to ensure that contracts were followed to the letter, Mr. Speaker, because there's two issues here. One is the cost of agency nursing, which I said is absolutely horrible, unacceptable, and we want to get out of it. And the other is whether proper protocols and procedures were followed in the contracts between the health authorities and the individual agencies.
The Honourable the Leader of the Official Opposition.
Speaker, the reality is the government mismanaged these contracts and should have been monitoring the expenditures, should have known how much money was being spent, and should have known what it was being spent on. They should have known before it went off the rails, to quote the Premier. So again, I say to the Premier, is this, or why are you covering up? Why not call in the RCMP and the Auditor General to make sure we get to the bottom of this?
The Honourable the Minister of Health and Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, the former CEO of Lab Grenfell is fully aware that ministers don't sign contracts with these agencies and are not responsible for overseeing whether or not they are followed to the letter of the contract. That's the role of the CEO, I would say, Mr. Speaker, and that is the role of the health authority. As the member knows, because he was the former CEO who entered into contracts with agency nurses while he was CEO, Mr. Speaker. What I will say is that we have asked the Comptroller General to review what has happened to ensure that if there was anything untoward, that that is addressed and then referred to the Auditor General, as has happened previously under my watch with the NLC.
So that's a little bit of the to and fro from the House of Assembly this afternoon on that contentious issue involving the contract with Canadian Health Labs. We understand that the contract in Western Health now has come to an end, and it will not be renewed, and that it comes to an end in Central Health at the end of April, if memory serves, and no word yet as to whether or not that contract will be renewed. There's been no suggestions that it won't be, but we have not heard one way or the other. And it's an interesting issue. $35 million over a five-month period. And the question has been asked by nurses and others, you know, how much could that money have achieved in the healthcare system itself over a much longer period of time? And we've seen issues like MRI wait times, which are extended for many people. Anyone who's waiting on an MRI can tell you they sometimes are waiting years to get an MRI, sometimes for relatively routine things and sometimes for very serious health issues. So the minister also addressed that in the House of Assembly today. Well, Claudette, did you notice anything funny in the old social media world today?
No, I need a little bit more.
Like your inability to get on board?
No, I haven't seen it.
Facebook was out.
Oh, yes, yeah, that's what you meant.
For about an hour and a half, something
like
that.
Yeah, I have. That was, yeah, I did see that news story. But yeah, it didn't affect me. I think I just automatically assumed that something was wrong with my phone, because I remember not being able to get into it, but not thinking it was a big deal.
Right.
Until I heard the news story, and then, oh, right, they're down. And then Twitter had some fun with it, saying, well, you know, people can get on board with us because our, you know, everything is good with us. So they kind of like poked fun at Facebook.
Yeah, for sure. But it was global in scale. So yeah, it's obviously quite large, whatever happened. And to now, and I haven't, you know, checked, you know, in the last few minutes anyway, to now, Facebook or Meta, because that's the parent company, hasn't come forward to say what exactly happened there. But they apologized for the inconvenience. Queens. It was about an hour and a half, and it came to my attention because I had a few people text me and say, hey, is your Facebook down?
Yeah.
So I checked, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. I can't get in myself. So didn't think a whole lot of it, and then did a little snooping around and found out that it was actually
a
global.
A big outage, yeah.
Yeah, very big. So, it's amazing how quickly people respond to that kind of thing, you know, and that how that's their method of communication now.
And it's a can be a really bad habit. Like I can just you know, you're scroll, I don't know how often I'm looking at my husband, I'm like, I am scrolling mindlessly right now on Facebook and I'm not even interested in what I'm seeing.
Not one iota,
and
you know?
I find myself clicking the show less posts, because whatever you're talking about, it's filtering through your feed. And just because you're talking about it 1 minute does not mean that you need ads for every single thing that you're talking about.
Yeah. Another thing to do is turn off your mic on your phone because it's listening to you. I don't allow Messenger to
do the voice to text.
Do the voice, yeah. So I just took it off, and guess what? I can talk about whatever I want now and not have to see the ads showing up on my phone.
That's amazing. It's a great life hack.
Intrusively. but what is interesting is that you're, you know, like you say, mindlessly scrolling, and all of a sudden you see something and you go, your brain is trying to process what it is you're looking at and whether or not it's a real thing or a fake thing, and you haven't even clicked it. You're just like trying to process what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden you get inundated with things that you paused on for a period of time. I'll give you an example. I was scrolling mindlessly one time and came across, I don't know, a video of a cow. It was a really big cow, and I'm like, that doesn't look real. And I was just took the 3 seconds to process that in my own head and say, that doesn't look like a real cow. Not that I'm interested in this cow any way, shape, or form. And guess what? All of a sudden, all these videos and pictures started showing up in my feed of cows. Thank you, Meta.
Did you say holy cow at one point? Oh, no, your microphone was off, so that wouldn't have triggered it.
No, I didn't. It was definitely that video. Because I paused long enough to say,
right,
what the heck is that? Holy cow. anyway, there you go. Yay. We're up to news time now with Sarah Strickland. She'll give you all the latest goings on in the province today. When we come back, things are not looking very good for salmon stocks returning to rivers in the province. We'll give you an update on that when we come back right after this.
Saturday morning, join us for the Irish Newfoundland Show. Send your request to irishnl@vocm.com or submit them online at vocm.com.
And we are back. Well, things are not looking good for salmon stocks returning to rivers in the province. 10 of the 15 rivers assessed by DFO in Newfoundland were in the critical zone, with just 4 in the healthy zone. And 3 of the 4 Labrador rivers assessed are in the critical zone. Stock assessment biologist Nick Kelly provided this update this morning.
So this year, we're seeing a higher magnitude of declines on more of our assessed rivers, but especially on the West Coast, where returns were much lower compared to normal. We observed declines in salmon returns in 2023 on pretty much all monitored rivers on the south and west coasts of Newfoundland, and most monitored rivers in southern Labrador, many of which were down by greater than 50%. So on all monitored rivers across SFAs 9, 10, 11, 13, and 14A, and 2 of 3 rivers in SFA 2 were all down considerably last year. We've observed elevated river temperatures in recent years, which could have negative impacts on salmon survival in freshwater, and not just for adults, but we're thinking juveniles as well. At-sea survival of salmon smolts from who left the rivers in 2022 to return in 2023 as adults was below average, with less than 3% of smolts surviving to return last year on the rivers that we have estimates for. A lot of different factors could be influencing marine survival, not only from year to year, but even within a year from population to population. These include changing conditions within the marine environment, such as changing water temperatures, changes in the zooplankton community, and predation, sea ice, and others. And on the south coast of Newfoundland, aquaculture is another potential factor that could be impacting marine survival of salmon, which we've seen extensive scientific literature in other regions of the world. research into the migration of Atlantic salmon within the Newfoundland and Labrador region and factors that could be impacting marine survival is ongoing. In addition, we presented information last week that suggests that the ecosystem around Newfoundland and Labrador is changing, which could have impact on the salmon stocks. The changes we observed in recent years include starting off with freshwater. Last year, average July river temperature in Labrador was the highest recorded. So this is river, this is freshwater temperature. And this is since 1994. And typically what we see in Labrador is that temperatures really peak in August, but last year we saw a surge in freshwater temperature early in the summer when the salmon were already in the river. We're also seeing temperatures exceed 25 degrees on many rivers in Newfoundland and Labrador, which may have physiological and potentially lethal impacts on juvenile and adult salmon. In the marine environment, we're seeing changes in ocean temperatures. Sea surface temperatures during the 2023 summer months were much warmer than normal on the Newfoundland shelf and the Gulf of St. Lawrence. The last 3 years were the warmest on record in the Newfoundland and Labrador region, with 2022 being the warmest. We're also seeing changes in food source availability. Overall conditions in the past 3 to 5 years are indicative of improved productivity at lower levels of the food chain in the Newfoundland and Labrador region. In particular, data suggests there have been high nutrient inventories, earlier phytoplankton blooms, and above normal abundance of small copepods and larger energy-rich copepods, which you would think should have benefits to salmon. But given their complex nature of their migration, it's very hard to tease out the direct of an impact that will have. 75%, or 12 of 16 rivers, showed declines in 2023 total returns. And 8 of these rivers had declines of greater than 30% compared to the previous generation average of 6-7 years. When you look at the longer time frame, 75%, 9 of 12 rivers, also showed declines in total returns, and 7 of these had declines of greater than 30% compared to the previous 3-generation average. Both of these that I just mentioned, each of them on their own, trigger a stock assessment in a year where there's not one scheduled, in the event that there's significant declines in salmon returns. So both of these, each of them on their own, meet the definition that we have in place of the triggers to trigger an assessment early in a year, but it's not on schedule. Some nuggets of good news. Atlantic salmon returns were above average on Exploits River. So we saw kind of a decline from 2010-ish for almost a decade in returns there. But the last 3 years in a row, we've had pretty good returns of, say, 27, 28,000 salmon. And returns to English River and Northern Labrador set another record high for the second consecutive year. However, we've observed declines in salmon returns on all monitored rivers on the south and west coasts, so SFAs 9, 10, 11, 13, and 14A of Newfoundland, and most rivers in southern Labrador, SFA 2. Many of these rivers are down by greater than 50%, and even as much as about 89 to 90% for some of them. We have observed elevated river temperatures in recent years, which could have negative impacts on salmon survival in freshwater. And the survival of salmon smolts that went to sea in the spring of 2022 and returned last year in the summer of 2023 as an adult to spawn was below average and was less than 3% on assessed rivers where estimates were available.
So that's just some of the things that Nick Kelly outlined as affecting salmon abundance, Atlantic salmon abundance, salmon re-entering rivers and streams here in Newfoundland and Labrador. And in the end, quite a few rivers have seen or are considered to be in the critical zone. In Labrador, they include the Southwest Brook, Muddy Bay Brook, and Sand Hill River. That's 4 rivers that they assessed. The Eagle River remains in the healthy zone. And on the island, the number of rivers and streams in the critical zone has increased. They now include the Exploits River, Salmon Brook, Terra Nova River, Rocky River, Come By Chance River, Bay de Low, Con River, Garnish River, Harry's River, and the Corner Brook Stream. Just two from what I can see here, are in, three are in what they consider to be the healthy zone of the rivers that they assessed. So what that means for quotas and the like will remain to be seen, but overall the situation is not looking good, although they are hoping that things will improve in the coming year. Yes.
Oh, I forgot to interrupt earlier.
Oh, you forgot to interrupt.
I did. We had a listener call minutes ago, and she was in a lineup on the Southern Shore Highway. She says traffic is backed up in both directions near the Babels dump. She says from a distance she can see flashing lights, but she doesn't know what's stopping the traffic. And she says she feels like she's going to be there for quite a while, and she just wanted to warn other motorists who are heading home on the Southern Shore.
All right, so that's by Babel's Big Pond?
That's what she said, by the dump is what she said. So,
okay,
yeah.
Interesting. All right, if anybody happens to know what's happening there, or when people can expect to see that portion of the road flowing again, I would encourage them to give us a call so we can pass it on to all of our listeners. And thanks for that. We always appreciate those kinds of heads up and calls, because that's, and the phone is ringing now.
Perfect.
So that's what this is all about, getting the information out to people. What I will do now is I'll take a short break, and if we do get an update on that, we'll let you know right after. This is News Talk on VOCM.
Every Saturday is perfect for a night at the cabin. The Cabin Party with Brian O'Connell. Saturday night starting at 7 p.m. on VOCM.
And we are back. Well, concerns about cancer care in central Newfoundland was the topic of conversation on VOCM Open Line this morning. Here's some of what area MHA Chris Tibbs had to say to Patty Daly.
Patty, I just wanted to talk about our cancer care clinic in Grand Falls, Windsor, and give some people some background on what is going through right now. Last week, the government received a letter from the four doctors that run that clinic, four fantastic, valuable doctors, Patty. Valuable because they wanted to stay in Newfoundland and Labrador. Valuable because they're doing everything they can to stay in Newfoundland and Labrador. They sent a letter to the government saying that they aren't getting the proper supports, asking for more supports so the cancer care clinic can stay open and they can continue giving the proper care that's so needed in central Newfoundland and Labrador. It's the only place that they're offering cancer care within the clinic. Patty, they haven't received a phone call yet from the government, from the premier, from the Tom Osborne, Minister of Health and Community Services. Back in 2022, Patty, on December 14th, I wrote an email with the subject line, SOS Save Our Services. That was over 14 months ago. In that email, I said that the healthcare in Central, it is collapsing. Grand Falls, Windsor is the backstop, Patty. There is no other hospital. With all these diversions and all the ERs shutting down, they had to go to Grand Falls, Windsor. If anything happens at a hospital, Patty, where does that leave us? And in that email, I also specifically stated that we have internists delivering cancer care here in Grand Falls, Windsor, who are very unhappy, that need more support. Well, Patty, we are less than 3 weeks away from this cancer care clinic closing, or these doctors walking away from it because they cannot do it anymore. And this government are sitting on their hands and they're handcuffing these doctors. And I want to know why. And yesterday, I spoke about it for 10 minutes. No response from the premier, no response from the Minister of Health and Community Services, Patty. And we are very irate in central Newfoundland.
Help me understand exactly what the concern is here, because I hear, you know, the need for additional support. So is that administrative support or is it technical support? Like, I'm just still a little bit confused as to exactly what the concern is.
So basically, Patty, these doctors say that they cannot give the proper care that's needed, now, Patty, because they are seeing up to 300 to 400 patients a month right now. They cannot give the proper care to these patients that these patients truly need, Patty, unless they get the support. So I think they're asking for one administrative, possibly two nurses, and a PCA.
Okay.
Somewhere along those lines, Patty. I think it was in the email that I sent you a couple of days ago, but I'll send it again, exactly what they're in need of. But it is. It's just support. It's four additional staff members to help with that workload, or they cannot give the proper care that's needed right now. And, Patty, I get it. Retention and recruitment, it's tough, right? Any government, any party, I get it. But when you have four doctors who have spent a lifetime here, who love Newfoundland and Labrador, and are asking for these supports, and they don't get a phone call, they don't get, we'll help you with A and B. When the budget comes out, we could possibly help you with C and D. Some sort of communication, Patty. Up until yesterday, the only thing they've gotten was, you're on the radar of the government right now, and that's it.
Yeah, and that's not good enough. So, again, I've seen the email, but of course I see thousands a week. Is the concern, are they saying that if the additional supports are not provided, or at least give a timeline for when the supports may indeed be put in place, that they're going to do what? They're going to close the clinic, or they're going to leave for greener pastures? What is the, I'm not going to say the threat, but what's the comment?
So it's what it's come to as well, Patty. And you have to remember, so when I speak to government or when I stand or when I write emails, this is on behalf of the people in Central. This is not on behalf of me. I'm asking for help in Central. So when these doctors say, Patty, 14 months, over a year ago, we've been screaming for extra support. And this government hasn't reached out to these doctors once and offered any sort of support or even asked them what they need. So right now, these doctors who are pushed to their limit, Patty, and I know these doctors personally, and Patty, they're old school doctors. God love them, they're old school doctors. They don't know what a 40-hour work week looks like. They want to stay here. They want to continue this service. But in order to give the proper care to the patients, so nothing gets missed, so the patients walk away with the proper care they deserve, they need these extra supports. If not, then they will not be able to run this cancer clinic themselves anymore.
Well, and of course, I mean, first, do no harm. So they want to be able to provide that appropriate level of care, which I think is something that gets lost in the healthcare conversation anyway, because we'll talk about the rate of pay, the numbers of hours worked, injured on the job, shortages, unable to put out a shingle as a nurse practitioner and bill MCP, all of these types of things. But what it all boils back down to is the level and the continuity and the quality of care we're able to get as residents, as patients. Because I don't imagine that, certainly I can only speak for myself, I know how tough those jobs are. Well, I've never done them, but I can only imagine how tough the jobs are, like, for instance, being an oncologist or a nurse or a social worker, what have you. But 12, 14, 16, 20 hours into a shift, I can't possibly be on top of my game, which is a direct concern regarding quality of care and the possibility to be hurt on a job, which has obviously been a problem for the nurses as well. So, you know, sometimes... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, sorry, Patty, you just hit the nail on the head. That's exactly right. They don't want to make, they want to make sure that there's no harm done to these patients that they care about, Patty. And listen, every person in this province has been touched by cancer in some sort of way. And Patty, I don't get it, because listen, if those supports for some reason or another can't be offered right now to these doctors that want to stay, then reach out to them and talk to them. I just don't get it, Patty, how one phone call can garner a $36 million contract from a Liberal lobbyist for 5 months, yet these doctors and myself and my community have been screaming to the top of our lungs for well over a year, and nobody can reach out to these doctors that are already here, Patty, and want to stay? How are we supposed to keep healthcare professionals here if our government continue to ignore them?
And that's when the conversation extends beyond how much they need or want to be paid. Chris, I appreciate the time this morning. We'll see. Of course, we've got a laundry list of questions for the health minister in particular. But of course, now with the government session back in the House of Assembly, there's going to be more and more of these types of conversations, and rightfully so. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Patty. I would just say, please, to the Premier, to the Minister of Health and Community Service, let's start taking care of the people that are taking care of the people. Get this done.
So that was MHA Chris Tibbs on VOCM Open Line with Patty Daly this morning. Well, the matter came up, of course, in the House of Assembly today. Here's what was said.
Almost 50 months ago, I sent an email on behalf of my community to the Premier, to the Minister of Health, begging for supports for my district, for a cancer care clinic now that we are less than 3 weeks of the doctors withdrawing their services. The doctors have sent them a note asking them to plead with them for services, for supports. I asked the Premier today, if you truly care about the people in Central, will you commit to giving these simple supports, an easy fix, so thousands of lives could possibly be saved? Will you commit to that today?
The Honourable the Minister of Health and Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm delighted the member has asked the question, because yesterday he spoke untruths in the House, Mr. Speaker, and I will address those today. He spoke them again on Open Line today. So, Mr. Speaker, he did write me a letter asking me to go visit. I went and visited. He didn't bring me to the cancer clinic, Mr. Speaker. We did go through the hospital. He thanked me for that wonderful trip, Mr. Speaker. I did pass his letter on to officials, but, Mr. Speaker, I received a letter on the 22nd of February. The member yesterday said it wasn't responded to. It was the same day. Oh. In fact, the person who sent me the letter, Mr. Speaker, thanked me for the quick response. We are working with the health authority, Mr. Speaker, and we are working with that group to put the resources in place. And I told the individual, and I spoke to the individual on the phone as well, and guaranteed them that the resources that are required will be put in place.
Hear, hear.
The Honourable the Member Grand Falls, Winterbucken.
Thank you very much. And it's good to hear that the support's going to be put in place, and maybe next time they'll take ours a little bit more seriously when we plead 14 and 15 months in advance. It shouldn't have to come to that, Minister. And I did thank you for coming out. You did do the right thing. But all I got to ask the Premier, if the
order, please.
If the Premier could stand today and let us know that he is not going to ignore the Central District any longer when it comes to this stuff. 15 months is a long time to be waiting. How many people in Central are waiting on bated breath to see if they're going to get the cancer treatments that they deserve? They didn't deserve that, and the doctors don't deserve that.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Speaker. So let's set the record straight. When I did visit at the member's request, and I told him, bring me to the areas that need attention, cancer clinic wasn't one of them, Mr. Speaker. And if it's 14 months and it was that anxious, he should have written me another letter and I would have gone and visited again, Mr. Speaker, because I do respond, as members know, on that side. When they bring an issue to my attention, I do the best I can to resolve it, and that member knows that that's accurate as well.
The Honourable the Member of Grand Falls, Winterbucken.
Minister, you spoke with one of the doctors that were on that letter. You spoke to her. Did you speak to her, yes or no?
The Honourable the Minister of Health and Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I have spoken to the individual on the phone. I responded to the email, Mr. Speaker, and I did assure the individual that wrote me the letter, the email that I responded to the same day, by the way.
February 22nd,
that I spoke to them and assured them that we are working with the Health Authority to ensure that the resources are put in place.
So that was a little bit of the to and fro between Chris Tibbs and Health Minister Tom Osborne today on the whole issue of cancer care in central Newfoundland in particular. A number of internists there who do cancer care in at the hospital in Grand Falls, Windsor, are threatening to withdraw their services if they don't start getting some of the supports that they need, including a nurse practitioner, a nurse, clerical staff and other resources, so that they say they can provide the same level of care as is expected in other areas of the province. And we have already heard from the mayor in Grand Falls, Windsor on that issue, as well as others. The minister says, he is aware and he is is working to address that situation. Anyway, if you have any thoughts on that, you're certainly welcome to give us a call. Well, Canada's Prison Service says a BC Conservative MP's claims that notorious inmates are playing taxpayer-funded serial killer pickup hockey aren't true. It says there is no working hockey rink or tennis courts for inmates to use at La Macasa Institution near Montreal, where serial rapist and convicted murderer Paul Bernardo is living. The Conservatives have been demanding Bernardo be sent back to a maximum security prison. Frank Caputo released a video on social media Sunday saying that while on a tour of La Macasa, he came eye to eye with the infamous killer. The prison service says its understanding is that Caputo and union representatives did not interact with Bernardo during that visit. So trying to set the record straight there. And do you remember Claudette Fashion Television?
Oh, with Jeannie Becker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's put out a book.
I heard that she has put out a book, and I can't remember the title, but I thought it was very cool.
Let me tell you.
Okay.
it
was a play on words.
Heart on My Sleeve.
Yes.
Stories from a life well worn. So she's using like pictures of some of the outfits that she used to wear, because she was a bit of a fashion icon in Canada during the those heady days of the 80s and 90s. And so she's said, here's the outfit, and here's a little story I can tell you about that.
Yeah, she was quite enjoyable to watch and to learn from, just her entertainment stories. That's great. I think that would be something I would be interested in looking at.
Yeah, I'd say quite a few people are with you on that. The book gets up close and personal with some of the celebrities Becker has met and interviewed over the years, including Paul McCartney, Madonna, and Beyonce.
It'll be really interesting, her take on that, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Very interesting indeed. Well, that's it for us for today. We'll be back tomorrow. Do join us then. Have a great evening, everyone. Bye-bye for now.